Hello, everybody, and welcome again to our work on the rays and the initiations. This is webinar commentary number 54, and we're beginning here on January the 31st, 2017. I don't know that it's so important to put down when what the date of the presentation is, but I'm doing it anyway. Well, anyway, we were talking about masonry and the, in this case, how Masonic work reflects the three stages of initiation and the symbolization of initiation, or the non-symbolization of initiation that we've been talking about. Let's see, maybe a little here. The three grades of appreciation or of comprehension of the initiatory process are hinted at, at least hinted at in the Masonic work. The ceremonial aspect can be related to the degrees of the entered apprentice and a fellow craft, and a little bit about the Mark Mason. And there we have the work of the first, second, and third degree. There are also initiations covered by the term symbolic representation, as we learned, not so strictly ceremonial. And the first hint is in the third degree, which includes elements of the fourth and fifth degree. And as we were told, third, fourth, and fifth degree are presented largely in terms of symbolic representation rather than so much in terms of ceremonial. And then finally, the Holy Royal Arch, and in some succeeding degrees, here it is, the higher degrees of the Scottish Rite constitute a vague and nebulous attempt to hold before the Masons of the world those expansions of consciousness and of growth into light which are experienced in the remaining higher initiations, those subject to the third process called illumination through revelation. So the second process is called symbolic representation. And I'll make that quite big, I think, you know, just so we really get that. And this other process called much later, difficult to describe what it is, and I think we really can have no idea of what it is. And the ceremonial aspect is the very first, for the first couple of degrees, and also lesser, less frequently performed aspects or degrees, such as the Mark degree. Okay, so what do we have here? Okay, and we'll make this a bit bigger also. All right, now we move on, you know, with that little bit in mind, considering what we have done up to this point. We move on. He has a little more to say about masonry. The Masonic work is an ancient and laudable attempt to preserve in some germinal form the spiritual truth anent initiation. So it's a simply, you know, you might say an incipient form, a beginning form, not a fully elaborated form. Ancient and laudable. And I suppose, you know, it dates back in a way to Lemurian days, and maybe it even was transported to us and came to us from other sources altogether, such as Sirius. Excuse me. In spite of the distortion, some loss of the ancient landmarks, and these are factors in the ritual, which are incontrovertible. And must always be represented, stable, and immovable. So there has been some loss of these ancient orienting symbols or truths, and a deplorable crystallization. I was a member of the Masculine Lodge. I went in some 43 years ago, and I think in the Masculine Lodge you do have real problems with crystallization, where the, you might say, the outer form rules, and there is little, if any, understanding of what the form means in an esoteric sense. And, you know, in that sense, people go through the motions. Nevertheless, the truth is there. And at a later date, in the early part of the next century, a group of enlightened Masons will rearrange the rituals and adapt the present form and formulas in such a manner that the spiritual possibilities symbolically indicated will emerge with greater clarity and a deepened spiritual potency. And we might say that efforts along these lines are really progressing. The work of AUM, Ancient Universal Mysteries, I think, is definitely quite a successful attempt in this direction. Of course, we want to know how far DK really indicates the rearrangement, and whether all the degrees will be rearranged or whether just a few of the more important degrees. There's more to be understood in this context. But anyway, let's just say that the AUM work is a modern and laudable attempt to bring an understanding, the understanding and practice of Masonry, into greater significance and greater applicability to our modern civilization. The coming form of Masonry in the New Age will necessarily rest upon the foundation of a newly interpreted and enlightened Christianity. Mm-hmm. Okay, there's something really important. And have no relation to the theology, and being universal in nature. And I think in some forms, Buddhism is also included. But Christianity, given the imminent reappearance of the Christ, is the most important. Its present form, resting as it does on a Jewish foundation which is nearly 5,000 years old, must disappear, and in the modern attempts to reformulate Masonry, this is being, the Jewish foundation is being written out of it. So this is something like 3000 BC. It kind of takes us back to the time of the death of Krishna and the beginning of the modern Kali Yuga. There are different ways of looking at these yugas and different spans, but the Kali Yuga is said to have begun some 5,000 years ago. This must take place not because it is Jewish, but because it is old and reactionary and has not allowed, not followed, this is the most important, I think, the evolutionary passage of the sun through the zodiac. Now, does this mean that Masonry must be reformed every time according to the precession of the equinoxes? The sun moves, retrogresses into a new sign. Does this mean that with every regression of the sun into a new sign of the zodiac, that SOZS, okay, aha, I'll do it this way, SZ, sign of the zodiac, and the other one will be the plural, Does this mean that with every passage of the suns, such as is happening now, with the sun moving into Aquarius by the year 2117, that that masonry must be reformed accordingly? But maybe we're speaking of, maybe now we are speaking of the greater age of Aquarius. And that will last some 25,000 years, in which event the reformation of masonry presently being attempted will have some real durability. Well, either type of passage, whether the short-term passage of 2,500 years or the longer-term passage with the great age of 25,000 years, each of them will symbolize human evolution. So we're told here that that passage should and does symbolize human evolution, and just as the sin of the children of Israel in the wilderness was their reverting to a dispensation and religious ritual which had passed and gone, the religion of the people in the time of Taurus, the bull, symbolized by their falling down and worshiping of the golden calf. We have to be careful of that today as well, as gold can easily be worshipped, you know, and the children of Israel had passed into the age of Aries, because for the shorter term precession of the equinoxes, of 2,500 years, that's sometimes given as a figure, but 2,160 is perhaps more accurate. According to that smaller term, smaller duration, precession of the equinoxes, the age of Aries had come. So today, modern masonry is in line to do the same. The ancient usages and forms, consistent and right in the Jewish dispensation, and I suppose under the age of Aries, are now obsolete and should be abrogated, should be done away with. It is equally true of the Jewish race that in the rejection of the Christ as the Messiah, they have remained metaphorically and practically in the sign of Aries the ram, or of the scapegoat, and they have often played the part of the scapegoat. It's important to keep the progressive rhythm going. Otherwise, we fall out of alignment with the available energies, and we simply do not evolve as the divine plan would have us evolve. They have yet to pass into the sign, again speaking symbolically, of Pisces, the fishes. I mean, in other words, to use the recognize the Piscean energies and to use them, though some have, and there are movements in this direction. The recognition of Jesus as the Messiah, or a great teacher among some Jews. Anyway, they have yet to pass into the sign of Pisces, the fishes, and recognize the Messiah when he comes again in the sign Aquarius. Otherwise, they are repeating their ancient sin of non-response to the evolutionary process. Well, when you think about it, too, in a larger sense, the lords of form, see, in a larger sense, now I think I'll use that one, in a larger sense, and in a larger sense, the lords of form, sorry, or the counterforce, do this repeatedly. and in general have refused to move into the theme of the present second ray solar system. And, you know, of course, that's a very long time, because the solar system is of duration 311 trillion years, approximately 40 billion. Okay. Haste makes waste. So there we go. Second ray solar system. Anyway, and may we not remain fixated in our own little ways in the previous incarnations we have experienced, maybe some of them successful, and not move on to the greater challenges presented by the present incarnational cycle. You know, looking backwards, it's hard to move forwards. That's just a general principle, and we have to be careful about it. Every time a group looks backwards, they fail. You know, France looked back to a former glory. Italy, in the recent World War, looked back to the glory that was Rome. I'm sorry for that little coughing fit there. Germany looked back, according to some, 250,000 years ago to the glorious Teuton that had been uncorrupted by admixture with inferior types and races. And even, you know, this will be studied perhaps in the future, but we're living through a time when the present president promises to make America great again. Looking backwards to a time of supposed greatness when certain principles which are now in place had not yet been evolved. Japan was, Second World War was looking backward to the era of the great samurai warriors. One can never find evolutionary progress in retrospective glancing, looking, attention. Those times may have had their values, but they are not the same values as must presently evolve. Behold, I make all things new, and there is and must be an onward progress. Even though it seems a little dangerous and uncertain, and even though it feels like you might have to give up some of the things which you have established in a very secure position, well, they should be used simply as stepping stones, as a platform, as a plateau, something upon which you can build the future and not to which you have to revert. I think the principle is clear. And the ancient sin of the Jewish people here, non-response to the evolutionary process. But as I say, there are signs of encouragement at this time, at least among the more progressive types. Okay, so now we're going to go on into another idea. Let us now consider what the initiatory process signifies to the disciple as he seeks to lead a dual life, which it demands. Now, this is interesting. The dual life of the disciple is something that we have often heard about, but basically D.K. is saying the initiatory initiatory process demands the dual life. So let's see why he says that this is so. You will note that I call it a process, in contradistinction to the theosophical definition, which regards it as a culminating ceremony of a period of training. Well, this is much more the truth, because over time, so much of the new will unfold, and time is required for this unfoldment. So DK seeks that we do not fall into the glamour of over-dramatization. We must not fall into the glamour of over-dramatization, as if one little, well, maybe big in terms of our psyche, but one momentous ceremony could elevate us from a lower position to a higher if we have not prepared for that higher position. The one thing that always rings in my mind is that the initiate is initiate before he is initiated. In other words, we have to do the work and come up to the level of the next unfoldment before we before that level can be confirmed by the fires of the rod of initiation, and maybe some things added to what we ourselves could do. We cannot do all, but we can do much. And we are the ones who have to take our own evolution in hand. The famous picture of Christ in the desert by Rorick tells us that the evolution will proceed by human hands and human feet. And this is true not only for the race as a whole, but for the individuals such as we are. The initiatory process is, in reality, the result of the activity of three energies. Okay. DK has given so much, you know, and of course, somehow we have to incorporate this in our understanding so that when events in life arise that may call upon or demand the presence of this kind of learning, they do arise, they will arise, in our consciousness. So anyway, three energies account for the process of initiation. The energy generated by the disciple as he seeks to serve humanity. So something is here gained in the process of serving and even of attempting to serve. We can say that something of foundational value is constructed or built. Okay, so that's an energy that arises out of service, an energy arising out of service. The energy made available to the disciple as he succeeds in building the Antikorana. This is the energy of the spiritual triad and is apparently necessary for the continuation of the initiatory process, especially of initiations such as the third and beyond. Maybe simple contact, with the soul, which is in that, and that contact is really the first part of the Antikorana process, although not the technical part that DK has instructed us in. Maybe simple contact with the soul is sufficient. Whoop. They say it's a good keyboard, but my typing is sufficient. For providing energy needed for the first two initiations. The energy of the hierarchical ashram into which he is being absorbed or integrated, initiation proceeds along ray lines. And so we seem to need the additional energy of our ray ashram. So what do we have here? Service, Antikorana, and Ashram. A-S-H. Oh. Well, I should have that. Ashramic energy. Probably I just provided the plural. So I'll do that here and make that available. I appreciate your patience as I do this. A-S-H-C. Aha, don't want that. So this is A-S-H-C, and this will be the term ashramic. A-S-H-C, and we'll see if I can get that there without the capital. Looks like it. Ashramic. Okay, that took a little bit longer than I wanted. But there it is. Okay, now, service, energies generated, energies generated in and by the following: service, the Antikarana, and the Ashram. In these three energies, each with its own mode of expression, well, let's think about that for a minute. We serve, the heart opens, we develop facilities of sensitivity. Through the Antikarana, we begin to touch the abstract mind, and we touch also possibly buddhi and the spiritual will. It strengthens our sacrifice petals, which are petals of will and which have to open for initiation to occur. And the ashram supports us because they have already achieved what we are trying to achieve. So members of the ashram have achieved and make available, achieved what we seek to achieve, and make available what we have not yet gathered for ourselves. At least they support the gathering of those energies. All right. So, it is these three energies, each with its own mode of expression, and each producing its own specific results, which implement or engineer the initiatory process. So if we don't serve, if we don't build the Antikarana, at least, the first stages to the soul and the later stages to the spiritual triad, and if we don't contact the ashram, we will not be able to take initiation. These energies are evoked by the disciple himself. And notice here the self-reliance required, and their increasing strength and revelatory capacity depend largely on the disciple's determination, purpose, and will, his persistence and spiritual integrity. Let's just say about that, that these are will words, you know, and they represent qualities which become stronger as we proceed with our development. It is through his understanding of the word process that the disciple discovers the true meaning of the occult statement, before a man can tread the path, he must become the path himself. And if we really think about what we are, a kind of emanation from a great source of being, so we are an emanation from a great source of being, we are indeed a path. The path of emanation, the path of descent, we are a path of energy descending into ever greater objectivity and into ever denser immersion in matter, or prakritic immersion, as I oftentimes call it. So, you know, when we think about what we are, let's remember our extension as an emanation from a source which we also are. Increasingly, the disciple finds what it is to become a creative agent. That's that third capacity used in building the Antikarana. Let's just say, using the creative thread, we build the Antikarana, consulting with the soul on its own plane, we become more creative. Soul on its own plane. I think, why not? And what plane is that? Soul on its own plane. It all depends whether we mean by the soul our own egoic lotus and the consciousness thereof, or whether we mean the solar angel whose own plane may be considerably higher than the higher mental plane, because its presence on the higher mental plane as a kind of a angel of the presence has involved a second fall into the dense physical body of the solar logos. Okay, using the creative faculties of mind and conforming increasingly as he creates to the plan of the Creator, the Lord of the world, and let's just say the building of the Antikarana helps us know what that plan really is. And then we can arrange and rearrange, manipulating the energy threads as they must be manipulated in order to conform to the world of being while we work in the world of becoming. The archetypal purpose of the Creator is in the world of being, and the plan begins to descend into the higher strata of the world of becoming, but it's really quite stable up there compared to the work in the world of becoming that is also in the three lower worlds, the lower 18 subplanes. There we work extensively, and there is a reflex that occurs according to our work. Certain qualities are built into the higher mental plane, the egoic lotus on the second and third subplanes of the higher mental plane. And we can't really do much about that building because it is managed by the solar angel and by its diversification into many solar angels, but we can provide the substance whereby the divine alchemist can do that building. They know so much more than we do. They are mathematical experts in these matters, and we simply have to do the work in the quarries and bring the rough stone to them, and we polish the stone as best we can, but they make sure that it fits into the temple structure with right exactitude. So we have a lot of help from our superiors who once were human beings the way we are now. The first three initiations are definitely, and in the most mysterious way, concerned with the creative work. You might say three is the number of creativity and of action. Arranging and rearranging. And of course, in a way, raise 4, 5, 6, and 7 are subsidiary to the third, and they carry those same kinds of qualities. So the first three are concerned with the creative work and with the spiritual expression in a human being of the third aspect of divinity, that of intelligent activity, which could be a whole lot more intelligent than now it is, but as we begin to grasp the nature of the divine plan, the intelligence with which we wield the available energies increases. He's dividing the initiations differently here. Remember how he sort of divided 1 and 2 separately in terms of ceremony, 3, 4, 5 in terms of symbolic representation, and 6 through 9 in terms of illumination through revelation. Okay, but here is a different method. The 4th, 5th, and 6th initiations are as definitely related to the second aspect of love's wisdom as it expresses itself through created forms. Okay. So 4, 5, and 6, and it's kind of interesting because even though we begin to become true, fully restored monads at the 6th initiation, it's still under the love-wisdom regime. So we're dividing the 9 initiations, looks like 3, 3, and 3. Earlier we divided them 2, 3, and 4. The 7th, 8th, and 9th initiations are occultly inspired by the first divine aspect, and of course the first aspect of divinity is the aspect of inspiration. So the 7th, 8th, and 9th initiations are occultly inspired by the first divine aspect, that of the will. Of course, it takes plenty of what we call will and misunderstand as will to pass through the 4th, 5th, and 6th. A great drawing upon the monad is required for those initiations, but here something even higher is intended. Only therefore at the 9th initiation is the human being a full and true expression of divinity. We really should somehow remember that because, you know, he said that of the Johans, they are no longer men as are the masters. So are they human beings? Well, you know, from this particular context, they are, and we've reached the 9th initiation is the full development of the human being, of the member of the 4th creative hierarchy, of human monads. Now, is that a human being? It's not a human being in the normal lower sense. But anyway, we become only then, after fulfilling the 9, the full and true expression of divinity, and I might add, on the cosmic physical plane. There's something that goes beyond that, of course, and are we human beings then? Okay, on the cosmic physical plane. Right. So, you know, different perspectives give us different descriptions, and it's not that any one of them is incorrect. It just depends on the perspective of the moment. He then realizes that in him all divine aspects meet. And why is this? You know, we might say the 9 is a number of synthesis. So all the divine aspects, and there are different ways to count the human being as a 9, a 12, a 3, usually 3, 9, and 12 are involved there. Maybe there's a way to count him as a 6, 2, in two polarities. So through them, the divine aspects, he is consciously, creatively, and constructively en rapport with the consciousness of the one in whom we live and have our being. I guess we could ask, is this the planetary logos, or is this a being even greater, such as the solar logos? Well, certainly by that time, there is some degree of solar logoic contact, because the first solar initiation is the third, right? So, and the first Sirian initiation is the fifth. We're talking already about the ninth. You know, we may even be coming in touch with our local cosmic logos at that point. But, you know, we live and move in a number of ones. There's the one in whom we live and move and have our being, but there are local such, and there are more remote such. We're living and moving and having our being in our planetary logos, no question about it, but also within our solar logos, within the cosmic logos, and on and on and on. Only we become more and more minuscule and inconsequential, but still there are these greater beings in whom we live and move and have our being. All this is the result of a process, you know, nothing occurring suddenly, overnight. All developments in nature are relatively slow and sure and gradual. All this is the result of a process and the effect of the inherent livingness. Now, we might say that is the core of pure being found within any life, no matter how relatively unconscious that life may be. All this is the result of a process and the effect of the inherent livingness. We all have this inherent livingness, no matter how unresponsive we may seem to be at times. At our very core is life itself, which is found in all forms of life, from the tiny atom up to those great lives who are little more than names to the disciple, like, you know, like, let's say, galactic logos. Yes. I mean, you know, apparently the masters have these amazing logoi numbered and classified. At least that's what I gathered when I read in Cosmic Fire around page 1084 or 1085, somewhere there, that these super lives were known to the masters somewhat, but even for them, the distance is remote and great. The initiation process, he keeps mentioning that. You know, he's not saying, notice, he is not saying the initiation ceremony. Okay, he's not doing that. He's saying the ceremony is, you know, either a symbolic or ceremonial representation, or is some kind of influx of energy bringing light and revelation. But anyway, it's a process, and it requires time. This is no. Okay, let's get back there to where we were. A process requires time. Okay, the initiation process governs the dual life of the disciple in three ways. You know, with regard to the dual life, we have to, through initiation, bring the powers and capacities and consciousness of the higher of the higher one of a duality, into the lower. It's a fusion and expression process. It's not enough to know that on the higher levels we have all these capacities. We have to bring heaven to earth using the seventh ray. We have to bring these higher potencies into expression through lesser contexts. So the initiation process governs the dual life of the disciple in three ways. DK makes so many of these lists, you know, it's maybe hard to remember them. It is expressed in the results effected in the three worlds and in the tangible and growing proof he gives of definitely defined areas of attainment. So that's what I was just talking about. The disciple, initiate, brings down the higher into the lower and thus proves he is in contact with the higher and even that he is the higher. So this is a manifestation, expression, something along that line. It is demonstrated as, okay, and this has to do with the first one, has to do with energies expressed in a lower context of forces. Then also it is demonstrated as effects in his consciousness in the form of an increasing fusion of soul and personality, as well as a growing power to invoke the inflow of the higher light through the medium of the Antikarana. So let's just say what we're looking at here is this is one of the ways of governing the dual life. So let's just say this one is all about effects in consciousness. And it's kind of interesting that soul infusion is considered an effect in consciousness. Is integration then considered more an energy effect? Because, you know, integration can take you up to the third degree, and soul infusion seems to take you to the third degree, maybe the fourth. And it's even possible to extend the energy integration of soul and personality up to the fourth degree. So again, the second example here of this governing of the dual life is the demonstration as effects in consciousness in terms of the, you know, there's soul consciousness and personality consciousness. Soul consciousness, and personality consciousness. I'd like to have those two. Oh, that's the solar logos. Not going to let me do that, is it? Soul consciousness just takes a little bit of cut and paste, and we're there. Soul consciousness. And I'm going to do the same for good old, let's see, can I do it? Personality consciousness. Yeah, I think I can. I'll use a hyphen. Okay. So it's the same for soul consciousness and personality consciousness. They are relating to the second divine aspect, and not so much to energies and forces per se, though they will have their energy and force effects. So we'll be knowing more, seeing more as we invoke the higher light. And what else then about this governance of the dual life of the disciple? As the initiation process proceeds, it is revealed both through the spiritual triad and the soul-infused personality as they unitedly prove the livingness of divine, of the divine love nature. Mm-hmm. So this is quite an interior process. Let's just say, yeah. Excuse me for just a second here. We're dealing with revelation through these higher vehicles and centers. As this revelation takes hold of the disciples' consciousness and conditions his expressive form and service, because it does have an effect below, we might say, because this higher expression does have an effect below, it initiates him into that mysterious area of the divine consciousness, which we call the heart of God. This is our planetary correspondence to the heart of the sun. Well, okay, where are we going to find this? And we might still find this on the cosmic planes, but also on that particular plane of the that particular cosmic etheric subplane, where the heart of the planetary logos is found. I can't really hazard a guess there. Okay, sub SP SPP. Well, let's do it that way. SPL, and we'll call this subplane. So this is a high demonstration. Our planetary correspondence to the heart of the sun. Where's the heart of the sun found? Well, it depends on how we look at it. One, a heart of sun is found on the higher cosmic mental plane. Okay. Another is found. Oh, come on now. Is found on the second level, second ether, or cosmic ether. I think I'm getting tired here. On the second cosmic ether of the cosmic physical plane. So one is an etheric heart and the other is like a causal body of the solar logos. Okay, so HOS, and we'll say heart of the sun. So we're getting higher and higher here. The heart of the sun, i.e. of our planetary logos, and the heart of the sun, i.e. the solar logos, are mysteriously related. Are they located on the same plane or subplane? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe, probably not, I would say. And it's through this sustained relation that it becomes possible for the human beings to enter the hierarchy. Oh, this is very occult. Very mysterious. And, you know, we enter the hierarchy on the cosmic etheric planes. So here's what I'll do. CEPS, cosmic etheric planes. We enter the hierarchy on the cosmic etheric planes, such as the Buddhic plane. It's a cosmic etheric plane. Hierarchy is found there, such as the Buddhic plane. Forget not that the hierarchy is the expression of the energy of love. So the Buddhic plane would have very close connection with it, and even the monadic plane, being the second cosmic etheric subplane, is strongly related to the energy of love. The relationship also enables them eventually to pass off the cosmic physical plane onto the cosmic astral plane. It's sort of, it's kind of a relationship which involves the astral plane, the Buddhic plane, the monadic plane, and the logoic plane. Okay, now I need two more there. Monadic plane, And I need logoic plane. Okay. Monadic plane and the LGP logoic plane. So, you know, how this happens, I don't know. But it's most mysterious, and it has to do with the way of higher evolution. Okay, logoic plane and MD. Maybe it's not going to give that to us. MDP. And I hope this will finally work. Okay. Monadic plane. All right. So let's read that again because it's so really powerful. This whole third governance of the dual life of the disciple. Expression through the lower personality, or through the personality as a lower vehicle, an effect in consciousness, and then finally, through our higher vehicles, the spiritual triad, and thus through the soul-infused personality. We have to remember this. I must always remember to get my bracket. Okay, we must always remember why doesn't that work for me? Okay. It's not just work. That's not working. I'm not succeeding. And this is one of those little slowdowns that one doesn't want to have. Yeah. We remember that the spiritual triad goes on to express itself through the soul-infused personality. Okay. So this higher state of the spiritual triad gets hold of the disciple's consciousness and conditions his expressive form of service. So the spiritual triad becomes involved in the service which the disciple renders. Okay, now, and this is a which, which the disciple renders. Okay, it initiates him into that mysterious area of divine consciousness we call the heart. Now, it is mysterious, and of course, it's not really taking him all the way to the higher part of the cosmic mental plane. It might give him sensitivity to, eventually, well, he'd have to be quite a high initiate to the higher aspect of the cosmic mental plane. But right here on the cosmic etheric levels, we do have the heart of God. The heart of God and the heart of the Son, in ways, both are represented on the cosmic ethers of the cosmic physical plane. So this heart of God is a very important idea. So often we hear of the heart of the Son, but not of the heart of God, our planetary logos. And, you know, maybe they are, this is my impression, that maybe they are on different subplanes of the monadic plane. You know, because, you know, maybe the heart of the Sun is on subplane number 2. Of the second cosmic subplane. Maybe the heart of God is on subplane number 3 of the monadic plane or the second cosmic ether. Maybe it works that way. We haven't been given much information about that. You know, when you think about the head centers, we have a head center and we have an Ajna center, let's say. And they're both found, I believe, on the highest etheric subplanes. But maybe the head center is found on a still higher subplane of the highest etheric subplane, and maybe the Ajna center on a subplane which is slightly lower of that same larger subplane. I hope that's not too confusing. What's involved here is that Master DK doesn't really get into the location of these centers on the subplanes and sub-subplanes, but we know that it would make a difference, that every plane has subplanes and every subplane has subplanes. And the subplanes of the first category of subplanes are different locations, vibratory locations, and the placement of centers on those sub-subplanes would be significant. Well, if you're not thoroughly confused by this time, at least I am. Okay. So what I'm going to do now is call this an end of Rays and Initiations webinar commentary number 54, and this is on the 31st of January, 16, and we are, let's see how far we've gone. We're on page 536. Does that look right to you? 536, and we began. Seems like ages ago that we began here, but maybe not so much. 533 to 536. Okay. 36. And we'll bring it down here to for the ending. That's something that has to be reviewed, these triple modes of governance. Pages 533 to 536. And we're going to be beginning with Rays and Initiation webinar commentary number 55. That's the number of Sanat. It works out that way. Pages 536 to something, and whether it will be today or tomorrow or whenever, I cannot yet say. Okay, friends, so that's going to be it for the moment, and if I've been a little halting in this presentation, the subject is deep, and I'm trying to straighten it out in my own mind for sure. But let's just say the initiation process governs the dual life in three ways. It makes for a proven expression of higher things in his lower vehicles. It makes for effects of consciousness, and it brings the revelation of the spiritual triad down into the soul-infused personality, proving the livingness of the love nature. And even though the spiritual triad is, in a way, the personality of the monad, it also is the true ego, which relates it to the second aspect. I'm going to put that in. The spiritual triad is also the, as DK calls it, true ego, which relates it to the second aspect of divinity. All right, that'll be enough for the moment, and we'll see you before long. Thank you. And I hope you got something out of this. I'm going to have to review it myself. It goes deep, you know, this second part of the book here. And, well, you might even say the last seven rules, they are really written for the initiate consciousness. So we must struggle to understand, and we will understand. Okay, bye-bye.